Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
And at the end of the day, when we just like, oh, we can't sleep, you know, we can't process these things, you know, we tend to do things like sink into somebody else's story, like the Netflix show, or we learn how to launder money in the Ozarks, or like Dateline, how people are killing each other, you know, and we're like, we can't sleep. We don't know why. We're so overwhelmed. The inundation of data, the ability to just be still is so synonymous, connected to laziness for those of us in this generation that we don't want to do it.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. I'm your host, Joe Boyd. If you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for being a listener. One simple thing you can do to help us out is leave a review wherever you listen. Today's guest is Dr. Jodi Carrington. She's a clinical psychologist and she calls herself a chief happiness officer. I asked her for the one piece of advice she would give any leader, and it blew my mind what she said. Hi, Dr. Jodi Carrington. Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast.
Hi, Joe Boyd. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You've been doing such great things. How hard can this be, human-centered leadership, really?
Yeah, it should be easy, right?
Yeah, I hear this all the time. Why is it this hard? Is it really that simple? Is it really just about connecting with people? Yeah. Well, again and again.
I'm actually thrilled to have you on. I think your life study, it seems to me, couldn't be more like in the bullseye of what we want to be here at LeaderCast, which is helping actual humans lead humans and figure out how all of that works together. I would love to just hear what your airplane answer is to what do you do for a living.
You got it. This is why I only take long flights, you see, because there's very rarely an airplane answer. So I'm a psychologist by training, and I've spent the vast majority of my career. I grew up in a little town in Alberta, Canada, and it's amazing to me so much of what I talk about in the space of leadership and trauma and connection is really about we've never felt more unseen in this moment. Mm. And particularly, you know, when I left that little town, it was all really because the people who inspired me the most are the ones who I think about in my quiet moments, my mentors, the people really, regardless of age, race, religion, you know, degrees behind their name, it's really about you remember most the way people made you feel. And I often think about that, you know, my favorite teacher, her name was Mrs. Holly Nordstrom. And I, in this little town, it was K-12 education. And I don't remember, gosh, my bus driver's name was Stan Comic. He was a crotchety old son of a bitch, and he picked us up every day from grade 3, dropped me home every day from grade 12. And I loved that guy. You know, he was like coming home at the end of every day, yeah. Right? And my favorite teacher, she taught me something in grade 10. I don't remember the literacy or the numeracy, but I remember in this little hockey town that I grew up in, I remember where she was standing and what she was wearing the day she had to tell us the then captain of our hockey team had been killed.
Oh, wow.
And I remember thinking, even as a 16-year-old kid, if the big people are in charge, if there's somebody at the helm of big emotion walking us through it, the rest of us will be okay.
Yeah.
And later in my career, oh my God. So I go on to get a PhD. I worked for our National Police Force as a civilian member for a couple of years, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And I started to realize what organizations look like when they don't look after their people. Mm-hmm. So you can be made of humongously amazing humans who just are wanting to help people. But if they're not led by somebody who can hold space for their emotion, the people they serve don't stand a chance. And so I ended up doing my residency on the East Coast of Canada, and I had to do a rotation with kids. And they said, listen, you know, you have to do this with kids. And I'm like, I'm not a fan of children. I much prefer the big people. I have three of my own now, so I'm kind of coming around, but I'm still not a huge fan of kids. I much prefer the big people. And I did this rotation with kids, and I fell in love with tiny humans. And I realized we knew even less about kids and trauma than we know about adults and trauma. Mm-hmm. And I did a postdoc in child psychiatry. My first job was on a locked psychiatric inpatient unit for kids. So some of the most dysregulated babies you can imagine, the hitters, the kickers, the biters. And here's the question we don't ask nearly enough about the people we serve. We ask this all the time. What is wrong with them? What is the problem we have to serve? On this unit, I would say, what is wrong with this kid? You know, he's got ADHD or ODD. You know what we never ask? What happened to this one?
Hmm.
And when we switch that question from what's wrong with you to what happened to you, It evokes in us an empathy. And empathy is context, is the prerequisite for empathy when we know somebody's story, right? And empathy is the antidote to burnout.
Could you say that again?
When we live in a world
that sounded really
important.
Okay.
Yeah. Context is a prerequisite for empathy, right? So, you know, you use this podcast as a space to tell people stories, right? So people are hard to hate close up. And when you know somebody's story, and that's the realm of therapy that I'm in every day, right? When I know your story, that's where the answers live. And context is not only a prerequisite for empathy, but empathy is the antidote to burnout. So empathy is the antidote to the ability to sort of have this place of not being able to stay in this game when we serve people, when we lead people, because leading people is some of the most exhausting things on the planet. Yeah. And we've never been more, people have never been more holery-ish than they are right now. Do you think it's true?
I don't know. I mean, the Roman Empire, they were probably like mean to each other, but maybe you're right. Who knows? But yeah, well, we have more access to the holery of the world thanks to the internets, right? So even
well,
if
and
it's
I think
not
what's
as
even
bad,
more critical,
it's more in our face.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they have more access to us.
Yeah, right.
So we've never, ever had this much access to the people that we serve. Right? They've never had this much access to us. And part of the deal is we don't get a break. I think what's most interesting about our ability to serve people, to the core of me, I believe everybody has good. We all have the capacity to be good. So I've sat in prisons with people and I've been with people who've had their kids apprehended, you know, sat in juvenile detention centers, assessed over 1,000 people. And I've never not one time met a bad human. I've met a lot of people who lose access to that good. And part of the job of the most effective leaders amongst us are two things: to get back to the good that is in everybody. And the only way we do that, the only thing that matters, the most effective leaders on the planet have this capacity for emotional regulation. The definition of that is how to stay calm in times of distress. If you think about your most favorite leader, and I don't care if you're, you know, operating a volunteer organization, if you've served in, you know, even in your family system, if you have, you know, worked in, you know, multi-million dollar organizations, if you get your most favorite leader in your head right now, the one that you respected the most, the one that you wanted to impress the most, I promise you, their number one skill, they had this on board, was to stay calm in times of distress. And it reminds me of probably the most important quote of my sort of whole leadership career came down to this, what a dead guy named Ram Dass said. He said, "We are all just here walking each other home." Hmm. Full stop. Nobody gets out of here alive. Hmm. And when you can become a really effective walker, understanding that, you know, the chaos is necessary to learn the calm, people, you know, attacking your company or, you know, people quitting on you when you've invested your life in them, we're just walking people through it. And the more regulated access to the good that we can maintain, our people, the people we serve, the people we lead will be better because of it. And so will we.
It's a lot of good stuff. If I said something like, look, we were supposed to have another 20 minutes here, but I only got 1 minute. If you could give one piece of advice to every leader in the world and you only had like 1 minute and they would actually listen to it and take it to heart from your experience in your work,
yeah,
what do you immediately sort of know what that might be?
Absolutely. 100%. I would say this: drop your shoulders in this moment. Yeah. Drop your shoulders, wiggle your toes, relax your jaw, let your gut out. That is a regulated body. And there is where you have access to all the best parts of you. Everything that you know to be true about how to be kind, how to have empathy, how to, I don't know, treat people well in this world. Because I think the rules of the game for me, you know, we're playing by a set of rules in business right now that was established for a world that no longer exists. Hmm. The 40-hour work week is archaic and we hold each other to that. Our ability to rest is still very much tied to laziness, because one generation ago, you worked your ass off during the day and you came home to a place where nobody could get you. Mm-hmm. If I think about my father, who's one of the most successful men in business I ever knew, at the end of the day, at 5:30, I remember he would come through the door, lay on the couch, watch MASH, maybe have a nap, huh? Yeah. And the only way his patients, his customers, his clients could get him is if they phoned the home phone. And we chose not to answer that, or whatever, you know, was happening in the day, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you wake up in the morning checking your email. If you charge your phone by your bed, right, which many of us do, mm-hmm. you don't even pee before you're checking other people's lives and our emails. And what, so the cortisol before you even put your feet on the floor is high. You navigate your children, your parents, they can access you at any moment, right? This is the first time in history. We would send our kids to school. My mom would send me off to college and she would say, you know, she would say that the possibility of me being able to talk to her was Tuesdays, because that's when I had access to the phone that was in our university dorm, right?
Yeah, right.
In the other place, she just had a break then from me. She would be like, well, shoot, I hope she's all right, because I don't know, you know?
Yeah, she'll call if something really bad happens, right?
Yeah, my daughter can call me from school. Yesterday, she calls from school. It bings on my watch, okay? So I won't miss it, okay? I'm doing something very important. It bings on my watch, and it says to me, the school's calling. Boom. Cortisol, anxiety. She calls and says, Mom, I'm feeling anxious. Okay. Like, what's happening? Well, I just feel like I can't breathe. I can't do these things. Okay. So the normal thing of kids experiencing anxiety in the run of a day is typical. Mm-hmm. You should feel this. You should feel that. Now, when you have educators or people or your friends to kind of walk you through it, all of us felt that. I just never had the capacity to call my mom. Now she's like, I got to go. Mr. S says we got to go to gym now. Okay. So I, for the rest of my day, I'm like, Jesus, is she okay? Mm-hmm. Now, 30 seconds later, she's involved with her buddies and everything's fine and it passed. And she comes to the door at the end of the day and I'm like, how was it? Are you okay? And she's like, I was what? Yeah, I was fine. The access that our customers have, our clients have instantly to us is not set up for the way that our systems were built. You know, my people ask me this as child psychologists all the time. What about kids and social media? They grew up with it. They have a script for it. Mm-hmm. We don't. As parents, we've never had this much access to our kids. Our parents have never had this much access to us. So the inundation of data that happens all day long really, really complicates our capacity to lead well. If we don't do this thing with no purpose, we drop our shoulders as much as we possibly can in the run of the day. I often, you know, I have the word shoulders written in my, on my computer, on my bathroom mirror. Every chance you get for the next few days, I want you to think about where your shoulders are. Whenever you think of it, I promise you, your shoulders are like this. Even when you lay in bed at night, because you're processing other things that relatively speak. And then at the end of the day, when we just like, oh, we can't sleep, you know, we can't process these things. You know, we tend to do things like sink into somebody else's story, like the Netflix show, or we learn how to launder money in the Ozarks, or like Dateline, how people are killing each other, right, you know, and we're like, we can't sleep. We don't know why we're so overwhelmed. The inundation of data, the ability to just be still is so synonymous, connected to laziness for those of us in this generation that we don't want to do it. When people say to me, do you meditate? Well, holy, it's the most stressful thing on the planet. Because when I slow down long enough to think about things, I'm like, oh, shit, that email, I got to get this person. Am I really a bad mom? I think I am. What about, did I marry the wrong human? I should have, like, what? He can't cook. I should have chose, you know, I had lots of choices in 2009. I should have chose, like, but the chaos is necessary for the calm. And we avoid all the emotions, right? Emotions won't kill you, but not talking about them might.
Developing world-class leaders in your community is now easier than ever with LeaderCast. In addition to our flagship May event, becoming a presenting partner allows you to stream multiple events per year, each with an opportunity to earn money. The new LeaderCast lets you invite 1 to 1,000 people with unlimited streaming opportunities. Check out more at LeaderCast.com or the link in our bio. I would never have predicted a physiological answer to the question I asked. That's the first thing, especially with your brain degree. That resonates as very true to start with. But talk a little bit about why you went physiological first. Like what that? I think most people would think I need to like be less stressed and then my body will calm down. You know what I mean? But you're saying it's the other way around often.
Yeah, not at all. Here's the deal. The body keeps the score. I think one of the most profound books by one of the most amazing psychiatrists is titled this, The Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. And that is the bottom line. I can cognitively shift in a therapeutic experience all the things, like what happened to you? What was that about? What is this? You know, I work with police officers often with severe PTSD. It's my favorite thing to treat on the planet. I have this huge love of trauma, mostly because we go about it all the wrong way. We always say, you know, what happened to you? Well, I witnessed this shooting, or I, you know, walked this person through this kidnapping, or whatever I did. And, you know, we never ask, and this is really critical, is where do you feel it? And part of our job in understanding sort of why that your body doesn't need to respond to every stressful situation in that way anymore, understanding where you came from becomes really quite important, right? And some of the first step is you know, you can't address what you don't acknowledge. So many of us don't observe, you know, what's happening in our bodies because we're so busy in our head. The noise of what we should be doing or what we're not doing keeps us from, in fact, we really disconnect, you know, the head and the heart. Mm-hmm. And what becomes so critical more, if I had like just a couple of sessions with you, I'm much more interested in two things, your sleep and where you feel things in your body. Far more important to me than what you can tell me about it, right? What you feel about it becomes really critical, particularly in this space where, you know, I think about one of the biggest issues that face us today is really the lack of proximity to each other, because we were never meant to do any of this alone. And if you think about even the square footage of the house that your grandfather was raised in and the square footage of the house in which we raise our babies, it is estimated that our great grandparents looked at their children 72% more of the time than we look at our babies. And what's critical of that, you see, is that if you had a hard day, if you got bullied on the bus and you came home to my grandmother's house, right? One bedroom house, who knew that you had a bad day? Everybody. Mm-hmm. Now my babies come home from school. You know, my husband is on a business trip today. He gets home tonight at 7:00. I got to navigate the kids because I have two, right? Somebody's got hockey practice. Okay, who's taking them? And at the end of the day, it's going to be like, hey, go. What's go? Come on. Yeah. And we lose our capacity to just look. And then at the end of the day, after we've, you know, I say this all the time, after I've single-handedly changed, you know, saved the mental health of children in Central Alberta, and I've written another book, and, you know, I've got 26 speaking gigs in the next month, what's happening? Blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, I don't have a lot of space to look into the people, the eyes of the people I love. And what's ridiculous about the human race is there's two rules to it. We are neurobiologically wired for connection. If you disconnect from infants, they die. What? We will never automate relationship. But the hardest thing we will ever do, here's the second rule, is look into the eyes of the people we love. And we've never had this many exit ramps, this many opportunities to look away. Hmm. Hence, we are in, your Surgeon General announced 4 months ago that we are in a loneliness epidemic in North America. And you can't make sense of hard things alone. Highest rate of suicide in your country and mine is middle-aged men.
Yeah.
You know, we think about who's the vast majority of leaders in senior organizations in this moment. Still, it remains men. Who's much better at processing emotion? Women.
Yeah. Well, I guess what strikes me is like we're in essence trapped in this culture now. We can't get out of it, right? So is the only answer just kind of discipline to try to step back from this culture and create those, like how it seems really hard to get back to. I know we'll never live like you're saying our grandparents lived, but how do we do that in this culture that is trying to get us not to constantly?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if the culture is trying to get us not to. I mean, here's the deal. Like technology isn't the problem. Like we now have access to so much, like, you know, I hope pancreatic cancer isn't a death sentence by the time I die because of technology. I love that we understand anxiety and depression and, you know, what that looks like so much better because of technological advances. You and I can do this in two different countries because of technological advances. The issue is how we use it. And when we think about the importance of staying present, I mean, this is archaic Eastern philosophical practices that would, it's been now never been more true, right? The answer is in us. The ability to just be overwhelmed and the expectations of the world increased means that's not what our body's prepared for. So I would say discipline is a good word, but I also think doing things on purpose, very intentionally, dropping those shoulders. You don't have to change the world. I mean, that's where we get overwhelmed. There's like, holy, like there's so much mental health and there's so much this. And you know, war and nonprofits and our kids are killing themselves and everybody's a disaster. And like, how do you lead a company? Because nobody wants to work. Everybody's hollery-ish. Mm-hmm. We lose access to the best parts of ourselves, which is the only thing we need. Mm.
The answer's inside.
Always and in always.
Explain that.
It's not new.
Okay.
We've always had access. The best parts of us, I mean, our ability to regulate emotion was the first sound any of us ever felt is this, the rhythmic exchange from our mamas to us. Bum, 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 bum. Regardless of age, race, religion, socioeconomic status, or gender identity. We understand that when we are distressed, what we need is the physical presence of another human being. In fact, if you walked by a baby in Cincinnati today, you were by yourself. This baby is alone in a car seat crying. You are neurobiologically wired to pick that baby up. You wouldn't just walk by it and be like, oh shit, I hope somebody gets that one. You're going to pick that kid up and engage in a rhythmic exchange in an effort to regulate them. That's in all of us. And the most effective leaders tend to understand that in times of big distress, it's not your job to fix it. It is first to acknowledge it, to hold space for it. You got to name it to tame it. Mm. And so much of that is in our bones. But we are so inclined as leaders to fix it that we miss this important step of simply acknowledging.
For those that couldn't see, you actually did the baby sway as you were talking.
And right?
I had never connected that to a heartbeat, but that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so fascinating to me because oftentimes, like, if you think about the most profound place you've ever been in your life, right? In this journey on earth, it, like the biggest loss you've ever had, you know, you're crying, you know, in the fetal position, or you think you're fine and you're driving down the interstate and you hear the song, you know, and it just takes you out of the knees. What you don't need is somebody to be like, okay, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Let's journal. Okay. Take a deep breath. Maybe like we should apply to it's at least, you know, we desperately want to get people back to this place of emotional regulation. But what we miss so much is just simply the acknowledgement, the showing up, the being present. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the three words that save me all the time as a leader when I want to fix it or come up with the answer. Okay. These three words, you ready? Tell me more. And oftentimes in this position of leader, I mean, when I've used these words with my kids or my husband, I don't want to know more.
Right.
I want to, let's move. Okay. I know it's awful that you have to work another shift. Or like, this is inappropriate and unacceptable. Oh, I bet it is. Let me tell you. Tell me more.
I will in our next two sessions, which you promised me for free. I think you said free too. So I'm very excited about our next two sessions without everybody else listening. Unfortunately we're running out of time, but I think this is the thing I want to ask while we still have you. Myself included, I think the most common thing I hear from folks when they open up to me, friends, but also professionally, is kind of what you're saying. I know what I should be doing, like, but I just can't. Mm-hmm. I just try and I can't. I just fail. So for some folks, it might be like substance abuse or some addiction or something. But for others, it's just like, you know, I know I should be putting the work in and doing this, but I just don't
for a run or having sleeping well. Like,
I just don't want to. Or I show up late to work for 10 minutes every day. I know I shouldn't. I just try and I do okay for a couple of days. Like, it can be anything, but the common thing is they know themselves. They've told themselves something they want to do differently, and all of us just can't seem to do it. And I'm curious, what's wrong with us? Why are we doing that? What happened to us? Tell me more.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, there you go.
So why is that going on?
Well, I think most of the time we have such a huge expectation for ourselves as, you know, leaders and business people and anybody on the planet. And here's what we say all the time. I mean, even when I ask this of parents, what do you want for your children? And people say this all the time. I just want them to be happy. Mm. Here's the deal. Nobody's happy all the time.
Yeah.
Don't be dumb. You don't wake up in the morning and be like, oh my God, I'm just so happy with this 48-year-old Ukrainian chassis. I'm so happy with it. Or like you roll over and you're like, God, I just married the best person. I'm not happy all the time. And I think we put this expectation that as good leaders, we should have a solid team. We should be connected. We should be. And I think it's really about rewriting that story a little bit about it's actually not about happiness and joy that we're searching for. It's about being able to have a script for every emotion. to know that our parents are going to get sick and die, to know that our babies are going to struggle, to know that our marriage is not always going to be okay, to know that we're not always going to be happy with our bodies. Mm. There's grace in that moment. And where we have access to the best parts of ourselves is when we give ourselves enough grace to sort of drop those shoulders, to live in that place where we practice that a little bit more. And just like your golf swing or, you know, spirituality, yoga, any of those things, it is a practice to get back there mm-hmm. and to not get so inundated with the messages of the world, right? The technological boom that has happened in our lifetime. I mean, I talked about this in university. I didn't have a computer until I was in my PhD. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a cell. Now, can you imagine? How do we function without ChatGPT? I mean, like that's in a very short period of time. And this system hasn't had the time to integrate it all. So much of our capacity to just give ourselves grace will evolve into this place of like, yeah, it's okay. Big emotions are okay. Complaints in a company are okay. People quitting on you are okay. What if that's the script, mm-hmm. right? I want us to be able to feel all the emotions, and then we process them much quicker and get back to this place that, you know, it's an L.R. Nost quote about, you know, life is amazing and beautiful, and then it's a friggin' disaster. And that is what life is about, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we know that to be true, let's stay very present for all of it. And, you know, we will be much more present for the joy. You can't selectively numb. And we tend to do that, particularly now with our, you know, substance, access to substances, including social media. Is that we just want to escape. Mm-hmm. And the problem, the number one problem with escaping, and I say this to kids all the time who are using, you know, marijuana or substances on a daily basis, is you can't develop a script if you're not present for your life. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to handle sadness or shame or guilt or rejection, right? Not everybody should get a medal. If you lose all 7 games in your hockey tournament or your soccer, it's because you suck. It's very sad. I know it's terrible. Try another sport. But also, it's okay to be sad. Yeah. It's okay for our babies to be like, oh, shoot. We didn't get the, I know. I'm sorry, dude. It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We need a script for futility.
Hmm. Dr. Jody, my new shrink. It's been a pleasure.
I got you, Joe. All right. I got you.
I'll schedule my appointment. Mo, could you get on that? Schedule those appointments for me. It'd be great. It's all weight free healthcare in Canada, so you can't charge me. That's how it works.
Come on.
Awesome. It was I really did enjoy obviously talking to you, and you're now part of the LeaderCast family. You've been assimilated and sucked in, and hopefully we can continue to have your voice on our platform in other ways. It was an honor to meet you today.
Thank you. I would love to be back, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And before I should say, how can people get your book and get in touch with you?
Oh, drjodycarrington.com. I have a podcast called Everyone Comes From Somewhere. And the latest book is Feeling Seen. And it really talks everything about what we're talking about today. So I would love your community to be a part of ours.
Thanks, Jody. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
In today's ultra-competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. Invest in your all-star employees and attract new top talent to join them with LeaderCast 365.